across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan
Show! On the podcast from The Nolan Show today, from speed vans with a PSNI to budgies being sick and taking time off on paid leave to look after wee Henry. Because you wouldn't have a budgie without calling Henry, would you? All coming up on the biggest show in the country this morning. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Nolan at bbc.co.uk is the email address. 03030805555 is the number to call. So what is fair from the PSNI with the use of their speed vans? This is what we're looking at this morning. And top of the shop, don't speed, you've nothing to worry about. And that reminder that speed kills. And that possibility that the police want to push out there, if you speed, you'll be done. Slow down. Or are the PSNI wrecking their relationship with us by putting speed vans in what look like blatant attempts to raise revenue? This morning, the Nolan Show looks at one example, the Knockdule Carriageway, as an example to test the spirit of the partnership between the police and the community. Nearly two drivers every minute are caught on the Knockdule Carriageway when the PSNI have been there on occasions. And the police break their own guidelines to detect people on that carriageway. Now, why would they do that? Their van takes up the entire footpath. And that means pedestrians trying to walk up the footpath on that carriageway, when they hit the PSNI speed van, they're pushed on to the road. They're actually pushed onto a cycle lane. Mums and dads with prams, elderly people trying to walk up that footpath, they're pushed on to ongoing cyclists. Traffic, in other words. There is no space whatsoever. And we're publishing now photographs of this so that you can see what the police are doing. The PSNI guidance that they've created themselves, that 1.5 metre space should be left so that you can walk along a road, it's blatantly breached by the police. Now, this is a lucrative site for the PSNI. Think about that. Nearly two motorists every minute when they put their vans there. And they place their van right at the point, literally their wheel at the point, where a 30 mile per hour zone becomes 40. And it's down a hill. Is that effective, good policing? Or does that wreck the partnership, this community partnership that we have? And we go back to it again. If you're not speeding, you have nothing to worry about. 03030805555. Chief Inspector Graham Dodds, Head of Road Policing in Northern Ireland, has told the Nolan Show that there are exemptions for the police with regards to legislation regarding the issue of parking on a footpath. So it's not illegal for them to do it. But we're asking you this morning, Chief Inspector Dodds, how does this build a community spirit? Placing a speed van where pedestrians just can't walk along the footpath. And why would you position your van, your wheel right at the point, Inspector Dodds, where people can down a hill 30 into a 40, they're speeding up a little when they see that 40 sign, and you're doing two motorists a minute? We'll start off with Gordon Downey this morning, a former PSNI officer. These images posted on our Twitter feed at Stephen Nolan. Gordon, you've seen them. What do you make of this?
Well, let's look at it holistically. They aren't speed detection vans, they're road safety cameras. And when a van is causing more danger than it's trying to prevent, then the PSNI would really need to look at its actions. They are staffed not by police officers, but by civilians. I'm not sure as to whether in law that they're exempt. Police officers in the due execution of their duty are exempt certain road traffic regulations.
Well, the PSNI and I have said that they are exempt because the speed camera vans are operational police vehicles and therefore fall under the exemption.
Well, that would be an interesting one to actually develop, because the PSNI, if you look at recent history in relation to what the PSNI say, that sometimes they are very economical with truth. But put that to the side for one second. When we look at the actual safety aspect of it, you're completely correct. It restricts the sight lines. Article 244 of the Highway Code basically says that parking on a footpath is not illegal. However, if you fully restrict pedestrian movement, then it can be, and it can be dealt with by the police. So again, the police have caused this by parking there. It would be interesting to see the statistics of how many collisions are taking place on that roadway. And if there are collisions taking place due to excess speed, perhaps the PSNI could consider a fixed camera, which would negate any of this.
They say that on the 24th of October, at this point, the speed van is also sitting so that it, with the result that it blocks a sight line coming out of a housing development. You cannot possibly see cyclists at the side of that speed van if you're exiting that road that feeds into the housing development. But this is very effective for the police in terms of numbers. 24th of October, just a few days ago, the van was there for just 2 hours, 94 detections in 120 minutes. Now, the police say, look, the highest speed detected was 47 miles per hour. That's 57 above the speed limit for the road. They say that the van was deployed for 30 minutes on the 17th of October, 12 detections, 27th of September for 2 hours, 100 detections in 2 hours, Gordon. Now, is that good, effective policing, or is that a trap for motorists?
Well, that will be for the public to look at and consider themselves. Yes, speed kills. However, restriction of sight lines also kill. Parking on footpaths also kills. So the PSNI really need to take a look at themselves. And the civilian, I would suggest the persons in the vans need some form of supervision, and perhaps have proper sites authorised. And on a safety
has been designated. Inspector Dodds, Inspective Downey, Gordon Downey. That's you. Sorry, Gordon. Gordon Downey speaking now. It's Inspector Dodds I'm talking about, who's given us a statement. Chief Inspector Dodds has confirmed to this programme that site that they're using has been designated as a permanent site for the PSNI to use.
Well, it may have designated as a site in relation to speed detection, but was the actual physical location inspected? They may have looked at it and then authorised it, so there'll be signs before where the speed detection takes place, on each way. But has the actual physical site been surveilled and looked at? And for the driver, the operator themselves, if you look at the photograph, they're sitting on the exit point if there's going to be a collision. If a car is coming down the hill, loses control because of whatever's taking place, they're actually on the exit point where the car would actually crash into them. So on the driver's safety level themselves, it's not particularly great.
Look, we're using this as just one example. So hopefully you can call us today and talk about how you see this partnership, whether you have confidence in it. 03030 80 55 55. Dave's our first call, calling us from Belfast today. Morning, Dave.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Go ahead, sir.
Excellent. Stephen, listen, a lot of people using this to kind of bash the PSN a wee bit. Okay, I'm going to tell you now, I was a victim of a traffic accident many years ago. I was in the States. I was one of the lucky ones. I couldn't move my legs for about 5 days. Thought I was on a wheelchair, spinal damage. I got my legs back and my mobility back, right? But I know a lot of people, Stephen, especially in sport, are doing wheelchair sport, disability sports, and they've all acquired life-changing injuries from drivers. Two things: speeding, careless driving, Stephen. Now, you've got to nail this in the head. The standard in Northern Ireland, I know, has got a lot worse. And I talk to people that drive in terms of deliveries and bus drivers, and they say the same, Stephen. You know, the standard has went down. So we do need law enforcement here. We need to have visibility of the police, especially in hotspots. I think you're quite a few. I would say probably Sillinoga would be one of the racetracks I've known all my life. They stand up there, Stephen, sometimes 60 and 70 miles an hour. I would love to see fans to Bally Sunwell, because people did get killed there. And we need to really hit this in the head, Stephen.
But,
you know,
but
I mean,
here's the question, Dave. There's no doubt that the vast majority of the community would support the police stopping people speeding where there are genuine risks to safety and life. There's no doubt about that, right? The conversation we're having this morning, as you're out and about on the roads, Do you think the police are positioning themselves in genuine danger hotspots, or are they positioning themselves so that they will catch people easily and it's nothing to do with it being a dangerous hotspot?
Well, Stephen, I've got to be honest with you. I mean, if they position themselves anywhere, I mean, it's a lesser of two evils. We've got to realise this. That's up to the PSNI risk assessment of where they are parking their vehicle. They should do some kind of site survey. And they probably have done that, Stephen. I'm really not too sure.
Now, why would they position themselves right where... So if you know that not carriageway, you come over a hill. When you're at the top of that hill, you see that you're in a 30 zone. You see the sign saying 40 miles per hour. You're going down a hill. Why would the PSNI position themselves right at that point?
Is it just visibility, Stephen? Just to send out a warning that it's like Big Brother, we are watching you, like, you know? I'm used to do that. I'm really not too sure, Stephen, but the PSNI, well, I mean, they're not daft. Like, I mean, they'd have done the risk assessment around these farms where they're putting them.
So, like, Gordon Downey, Dave's hit the nail on the head there. It's to scare people and it's to slow them down. What's wrong with that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with scaring people into compliance of the law, and that's one of the major facets of law. If you break the law, you can be held to account. But when you look at what they're doing, if they're breaking the law to catch people doing the law, are they demonstrating best practice? Are they creating bridges with the community, or are they destroying them?
Richard's in Ballymoney. Morning, Richard.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning.
Good morning. I would just like to draw your attention to a stretch of road between the end of the new delayed road between Ballymena and Ballymoney. As you're going past the Dunloy Cross, coming up to it, it says dual carriageway, half a mile. However, the stretch of road that's signposted as dual carriageway has only got a single lane. As you come off that supposed dual carriageway, you then go on to a crawler lane, which splits into two. People misread this as being the dual carriageway and go up to 70 miles an hour. And then there's a speed bump always, or quite regularly, sits over the other side. I mean, you know, it's very, very misleading because it says dual carriageway half a mile, which is actually the single stretch of road. As you come off that single stretch of road, it then breaks into two. And this is not the dual carriageway that people think it is, and then they get caught for speeding. Now, the A26 is a dangerous road, and there's been quite a few recent fatalities on it.
Well, there you go, then.
This particular stretch of road where this dual carriageway is signposted, there hasn't been any.
So do you think they should be improving the signage as well as putting the speed vans there?
Well, I think the signage misleads people into thinking that when they hit the crawler lane that this is the dual carriageway, which it's not. People then go to 70, and just as they go over, there's a brow of a hill there, there's quite often a speed van sitting. It's very misleading.
And how do you feel about that?
Well, I think the signage for one's misleading. And I think that people genuinely, whenever they see the dual carriageway half a mile, misread it by thinking there's a dual carriageway in half a mile, not for half a mile.
I'm looking at some of the statistics here for fatalities on our roads. And this year already, 50 people have lost their lives. That's 50 people. And we're not even at the end of the year yet. Kathleen O'Hara, former school principal. Good morning to you, Kathleen.
Morning, Stephen.
We're asking people to look at the photograph on my Twitter feed this morning and tell us what they think. Do you think that the police are working within the spirit of a partnership with us?
I think it's very difficult for somebody when they get caught speeding because they want to kind of, you know, say, you know, that was my fault, that was the police's fault. You know, if there's a speed limit and you're travelling that road, like I travel the A1 all the time, I know exactly where the speed limits are coming. And people who are travelling this road will know where the speed limits are coming. And I have to trust that if the police say that there is a speed limit here for a good reason, then they have actually, you know, put that there for good reason. You know, whether people think it's there to catch them or not, they think people don't like to be caught doing things wrong or speeding. So, you know, automatically we want to contest that. But I mean, first, if you get caught speeding, you get caught speeding. And the figure of 50 people dying on the roads, if I have to take the car down 10 miles per hour to comply with speeding regulations and to ensure that it is safe for people to be on the road, then I do that.
So on that nocturnal carriageway, if the police are catching nearly two people a minute, and that was the statistic that we had for September, and they park in the same place the next month, and it's the same statistic. In fact, last week it was another 100 people in a two-hour period. Why, Kathleen, if it's about slowing people down, would they not go to the top of the hill and be very visible if they are continuing to catch hundreds of people in the same place every time? It's not very effective, is it, in slowing people down?
I have to say, no, it's not. They need to review that. And I have, as somebody who kind of sees a speed limit, slows down, I actually think the better way of slowing down is to have those electronic signs. And it probably it's more cost effective to have an electronic sign showing your speed. Just beside me is a primary school. On it, there's the electronic speed when you're going up the road. If you're over that speed, automatically you think, oh my goodness, you know, I'm approaching school here. I better look at my speed again. So I think there are ways of doing it. But, I mean, you would have to ask the individual police person. If it is to get revenue, I know that the police service are strapped for cash at the minute, but I don't know. I don't think that would be entirely the case. It wouldn't be enough to solve the issues they have with finance in the PSNI to stop 100 cars.
Brian's in Enniskillen. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. I think it's more of a target-based approach with the police in terms of creating a file that they can put in front of us, the public, and say how good we are at traffic calming. It's the wrong approach. It's antiquated. And what should happen? There should be more speed ramps in areas. And the vans that go out, in honesty, should be out late at night, for example, in Enniskillen, when there's donuts being done and all sorts of speed through parts of our car parks and so forth in Enniskillen. So I don't have any respect for a speed PSNI officer or one of their retired jobs.
What do you mean you don't have any respect? Why not?
Well, you asked what our opinion was of the speed traps, and I'm just saying I don't have respect for it, because in Enniskillen they're in the wrong areas, they're at the wrong times, and they're an easy catch. And what I'm trying to explain to you is the problems we have around Enniskillen are late at night when people are raking around car parks. Where's the PSNI officers then? Or rather, the retired jobs for the boys, road traffic branch guy who's been in the PSNI and is now sitting in a van.
Well, how do you know they're not in the right place?
Because I'm from Enniskillen. I drive through it daily. I see the incompetence. I see the lack. There is no accidents in the, on the roads where I see the PS, the traffic branch sitting. I honestly can tell you I want them in the right areas. I would back them all the way. But you did at the top of your programme say what opinion I have of them. And I don't have a good opinion at this stage, because they're in areas just to make up the targets. And that's a known fact. But the other thing,
well,
I would
it's your opinion. That's what we're discussing today. It's not a known fact. It's your opinion.
Any police officer that I know that's retired in or was is still in the job would tell you that PSNI is target driven in every area, including road traffic calming. But we should have more speed ramps. We should not be using it as a form of target / revenue. Because the way things are at the moment, Stephen, is that you're heading into work at the clock, say, on a Saturday morning, and there's a traffic van sitting, and there's maybe two dozen cars going in that road within that hour. That's just nonsense. And they have it situated in one example, dropping from a 40 to a 30. Within a split second, you could get caught just, you know, as you're braking, you could be at 30 seconds, at 33, or blah, blah, blah. And I just think the whole approach is wrong. Entering town should have more speed ramps, and they should be targeting late-night driving and raking about the place.
Well, Chief Inspector Graham Dodds tells us the following. He says each deployment site used by the Road Safety Partnership is subject to a site visit and a risk assessment prior to being authorised for use. We haven't got this. There's the photograph up right now, 30 seconds ago. If you go on my Twitter feed, at Stephen Nolan, you can see this. So the PSNI telling us that hold on, Brian, the PSNI telling us that this speed van, which takes up the entire footpath at that nocturnal carriageway, has passed a risk assessment. So you start to think to yourself, well, how? because Inspector Dodd says that at the same time that this has passed a risk assessment, there has got to be 1.5 metre space between their van and the side of the road. In other words, that there's some footpath to walk along. There isn't. There isn't on this site. There just isn't.
I'll take a photograph the next morning that I see the van parked on the footpath, where if I was in a wheelchair, you certainly wouldn't be getting across the road at the bottom of a school which is closed on a Saturday.
Well, anybody on the Knockdule carriageway in a wheelchair, they are forced onto a cycle lane where that van is. That's just a fact, a parent with a pram. What do they do? Yeah. They're at the very side of the road. Edward and Lauren, next morning, Edward.
Morning to you, Stephen.
Go ahead.
I live beside a motorway here, and there's a fella who does the speed camera, has a van parked on down the road from me, and I can tell you the one thing, he does a very good job, and I would fully support him, and he's not an obstruction to anybody at all. Because you see where I live here, you see the speed, it's mind-boggling, and I say to this fella, he does a good job, and I'll say to him, well done. And as far as these motors are coming down the motorway here, dead end to Larne, and listen, all they need is wings and they'll be airborne.
Jim Wells with us this morning as well, former minister in government, and you support what the police do, Jim.
I do, and indeed I've been caught, Stephen, not on the Knockdule carriageway, but on the Newton Arch Road. I was guilty. I did it. I was offered a speed awareness course, which I did, and I must say, I actually found it very valuable. It certainly highlighted aspects of my own driving that were left a lot to be desired, and I think I'm a safer and better driver as a result of the experience. The other point is that other modern cars, including the one that I have at the moment, it actually has a device on the screen that alerts you to the speed limit and alerts you to the fact that you're exceeding it. So therefore, many of the people who are being caught have no excuse because they don't even have to rely on the signage. Their own car is telling them you're going too fast. And I agree with the previous caller, these new signs coming in, flashing signs that tell you you're over the limit, I think are excellent, and I think should be brought in as many occasions as possible.
So in other words, I think you're saying, given technology these days, not everybody has a new car, by the way, but let's have zero tolerance attitude to speeding. You can't speed involuntarily. It's you putting your foot on the accelerator. Matt in Belfast, morning, Matt.
Good morning.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'm just phoning to say, I've actually seen that van on the Knockdule carriageway, and it takes up the entire footpath. So anybody with a pram or a wheelchair have no choice but to go on the road. So I'd argue it's actually more dangerous.
But did it slow you down?
No, because I was in the middle of traffic anyway. I follow the speed limits anyway.
Well, would it slow you down?
No, I always follow the speed limits, so it's no cost to me. Also, I would argue that the speed limit needs changed in that area. I know you know it well. There's a new housing development where that old garage used to be.
That's where the van sits on top of. That van is just a few yards away from the exit and entrance to that housing development. You're coming out of that housing development. That speed van is affecting the sight line coming out. The police just have set it up as a permanent site anyway. They say it passes their tests.
Yeah, but my point is, just what that is, you know, you're coming straight into from a 30 into a 40,
correct,
right, with that entrance. That is. So, I think that should be changed. The 30 should be extended further up the carriageway.
Gordon Downey, quite a few people, obviously Matt questioning it there, quite a few people supporting the police because they realise, Gordon, if you're going to be on the right side of something, let's be on the right side of saving people's lives, slowing people down.
Yeah, people, generally everyone supports public safety, but what the ethos of this is it ethically correct? Is it correct in relation to causing danger themselves? They're parked restricting the sight line. So everyone will agree, generally, yep, speeding is wrong. However, when you cause danger to other people, then that cannot be right. And what I'd be interested to see was, if perhaps one of your research teams would put a freedom of information request in and get a copy of that risk assessment. I'm sure the PSNI are so proud of it, they're quite happy to release it with any personal redacted information, and then we could all analyse it.
That's interesting. We actually contacted the police about the deployment of speed vans. My goodness, it must have been over a year ago now. And they told us that they deploy the speed vans where there are known accident hotspots. So we then asked them to send us through the sheet showing where they deploy the vans and the accident hotspots, and show us where they had actually put these vans over that 12-month period. And the PSNI responded at the time to say they were reviewing their policy, and we never heard a dicky bird since. We must ask again. Stephen and Derry. Morning, Stephen.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I think your police officer gentleman there who was on the police actually said that they were safety, road safety cameras rather than speed cameras.
Yes.
I'm just wondering how many, what would be the data for how many people have been fined for other road incidents other than speed with these cameras?
What do you mean?
Well, if you're undertaken on the carriageway, which is against the law, has that been recorded and has a fine been administered for that?
All right.
You know, there's other rules in the road that can be broken other than speed, Stephen.
Stephen, thank you. Thanks to Gordon Downey this morning, Jim Wells, Kathleen O'Hare, 03030 80 55 55. Look, it's just one area to stimulate this debate. But if you want to have a look at the picture in the Knock carriageway, it's on my Twitter feed now, at Stephen Nolan. 9:31 this Monday morning. Monday the 28th of October. All the Christmas stuff's out. I bought my first wee selection box the other day. Didn't last 10 minutes. Gone. Right into my belly. Here comes the news from the BBC. Right. Morning to you all. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget the podcast goes out every day so that you can listen to the programme whenever you want to. You might remember Shan, who was on last week with us. It was Friday she was on, telling us about her restaurant in Carrickfergus, how trade had plummeted to such an extent that she was worried about staying open. And that was because NI Water had decided to do lots of work right outside her shop front. Morning to you, Shan.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good
how
morning. Well, more to the point, how are you? We know that NI Water were installing an essential new storm sewer on Castle Street. It was affecting you big time. Work's finished on Friday. Tickety-boo. All's
no,
well.
No, not at all. Not at all. We're on North Street. Stephen, we're number 2 North Street, so the very bottom of North Street. They started on Castle Street, which just touches the end of North Street. It's right at the very end. So in the space of a month, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, they've moved about 100 yards in total in their works. So they are now, they're still at our front door, and they're there since 8 o'clock this morning. We've got the digger, the barriers, all the rest of it. It's going to be an absolute nightmare again today. The noise just kills our trade. I don't know, they're not prepared to do anything about it. So they've got the acoustic barriers, which, to be honest, if somebody's digging through, I don't know how many feet of concrete, it does nothing to dull out the noise.
So what NI Water's public statement is that the work outside Luna, that's your place, is now complete and is presently being reinstated. But what they've done is they've moved one shop up.
Well, they're still actually at our front door. So they're not, technically, they're still not past Luna. They are moving to the shop right beside, but like it's right beside Stephen, you know, so the noise is going to be every bit as bad, you know. And I would say before, when it gets to the point where the noise isn't affecting us, they would need to be right up at the top of North Street. And like I say, we're number 2, we're right at the bottom, and God knows how long it's going to take them, because it's taken them so long to get this far. I believe they've hit rock and all the rest of it, but, you know, that doesn't help our business at all. We are in financial crisis here because of NI Water.
Real crisis?
Yeah, it's a nightmare. It's killing our business. And they haven't contacted us. They haven't offered any sort of compensation. You know, even during COVID, the government paid money to businesses to help them when they had to close, when their business is suffering, and we've got absolutely nothing.
You're saying that they haven't contacted you. NI Water are giving a complete different story. So what is going on here? Here's what they say. NI Water's Senior Project Manager and the A.G. Wilson team, that's NI Water's contractor, A.G. Wilson, met with the owner of Luna Cafe and continue to liaise with businesses throughout this work.
Oh, that was last Monday. David, I think his name was, the project manager, came out to the restaurant, had a look around, and he told my husband, Neil, that it's just unfortunate that we're the only restaurant on North Street. The work had to be done anyway, and that is literally all he offered. You know, they've tried with the acoustic barriers, but like, it doesn't do anything. If somebody's drilling with a big digger outside your restaurant, you're going to hear it. You're going to feel the vibrations. It's a nightmare. They're just bulldozing through our business, Stephen, really. They don't care. I don't know. They seem to be under the impression that they don't have to do anything, but people are going to lose their jobs. We cannot survive this.
What percentage are is your revenue down?
They literally halved our revenue since they started. So the work started on the 16th of September on Castle Street. Around about the 23rd, they came to North Street. And since then, they have cut our takings in half, literally. Now, we're a brand new business. We are not in a position to... we haven't built up reserves yet. We're only open 5.5 months. And they're literally killing us. They're going to put us out of business unless they offer some sort of fair compensation. Like a 2 grand payment isn't going to cut it at this point.
Is that what they've offered you?
No, they haven't offered us anything, but I'm just saying, if they were to come back and say, there you go, they have halved our hard takings, and, you know, we're trying to bring jobs to a town that is in serious need of regeneration, and I do believe the council and so on are trying to, you know, bring Carrick back to life, and we've put this beautiful restaurant in, and Northern Ireland Water are just come along and reckon that they're destroying everything for us.
How do you, what would you expect them to do if there is an essential drain that needs to go in there?
Well, the work needs to be done, Stephen. You know, that's fair enough. But I would expect, you know, they never contacted us to say about the noise in the first place. The noise landed on us, was enforced upon us. They could work during the night. I've heard that, you know, works go on during the night in other places.
Why don't they do it during the night? That's a fair question. Why not?
But you see, they never contacted us about that. They never suggested that. They're just saying the work needs to be done. As well as that, initially they had started stopping work, if that makes sense, sort of between 12 and maybe 2:30. But that only lasted a few days because I think then they realised they're running so far behind that they can't afford to do that. Like I said to you on Friday, I think the contractor at one point told my husband that this work is running about 6 weeks behind schedule already. So, like, they're supposed to be... By Friday, on the letter that we received in September, by the 25th of October, they were supposed to have completed work on North Street. And they're still outside number 2 at the bottom.
The NI Water say the work is part of a wider £3 million programme of wastewater improvements ongoing in the Carrickfergus and Green Island catchments to improve the wastewater network serving the businesses and residents of Carrickfergus. It'll help to reduce the risk of out-of-sewer flooding. It'll improve the water quality in Belfast Lough. So
that's very important work. But it'll not improve our business because our business will not be there, Stephen.
Are any local councillors coming in and speaking to you and rallying around you?
No.
Any political party connecting with you?
We tried. We have, obviously in Carrick, there's a large DUP presence and... I think it was the Ulster Unionist Party. My husband contacted them as well, and they basically said they can't do anything. I think there's some sort of rates rebate that you can apply for, but this then this takes weeks and weeks to process. We're talking about the day-to-day cash flow to keep a business open, to pay staff, to pay rent, to pay suppliers. And this is why we need NI Water to compensate us fairly so that our business doesn't close because of their work. You know, to offer an apology just isn't good enough. If you bang into somebody in the street, you apologise. You know, if you crash into their car and damage it, you pay for the damages. But as far as NI Water's concerned, they're not prepared to pay anything.
This must be a lot of psychological pressure on you.
Stephen, honestly, there is no stress like financial stress and the effect on people's mental health. And that is just horrific. You know, the amount of sleepless nights that we've had over the head of this, it is desperate, because literally, where is this money going to come from? and they're shutting us down. They really are, and they're prepared to do nothing about it. So I really hope that this does go to a ministerial level and somebody higher is able to say, hang on there, lad, this isn't fair, you need to put this right.
How long is the business open, Sian?
We opened on the 2nd of May, Stephen, so 5.5 months.
My goodness. And had you other businesses like this before, or is this the first time?
My husband, he has a background in hospitality. He's been doing it all his life, more or less. He had a restaurant a few years ago, but moved on from that. So this is our family business now. Like I said to you last week, we reached number one on TripAdvisor for restaurants in County Antrim. So that's out of over 600 restaurants. That's how good we believe Luna is. You know, it's not a rubbish restaurant. It's brilliant. It's amazing. People love it. And NI Water are just ruining it.
You're getting up in the morning and all of the pressures that a business in a normal environment has, and mm-hmm. and finding the money at the end of the week to pay salaries, to employ people. You're trying to keep the food as good as possible so that you can attract as many people as possible. All the pressures of a business, in other words.
Well, do you know what? Running a restaurant is not for the faint-hearted. We're operating to extremely tight margins, and especially in the current economic climate. It's hard work, but, you know, my husband does, you know, the most of the work. He runs Luna himself, and nobody does it better than him. He's brilliant at what he does, and NI Water are just bulldozing him. They really are. It's horrendous.
Well, it's not just NI Water that have questions to answer. We've been on to you, I don't know, 2-3 times in the last week. I'm just interested in why those local political representatives are not with you, by your side, at least doing everything they can to help you.
And I know, what is going on?
What is going on? Have any of them actually come out and spent time with you on the ground?
I suppose since we've opened, you know, they've been supportive, but in terms of trying to get over this massive obstacle, they basically said there's nothing else they can do. So, Alec, do we go? How do we go? Do we go direct to Stormont? Do we go? I don't know.
But the DUP, I'm choosing to cite the DUP that because their leader Gavin Robinson has talked about their party engaging in bread and butter issues. And you say there's a large catchment of DUP representation in that yeah. area. Maybe they think mm-hmm. there's just nothing they can do.
Yeah, well, as far as we know, they've told us they can't do anything else. So, I would agree with you. I would have thought that the local political parties would be all over this and doing everything they can. But we've pretty much been left on our own.
I don't want you to... I'm not trying to get you to cry this morning, but Mike in Carrickfergus... he's going straight to voicemail when we try to ring him back, but he's just phoned us to say, I went past Luna in Carrick. I had to cover my ears going past it. Can they not do yeah. the work at night when everywhere is closed? So he's clearly recognising the noise. Like, why would you want to go and sit in a restaurant with a drill noise beside you? Like, why would you?
You couldn't. You know, there's a news agent on the corner of the street and they have their front door open all day long, and I don't know how they haven't lost their mind or their hearing. Like, it's horrendous noise, Stephen.
Well, look, we've promised we're going to send someone up this week. So we will do that. We'll be up within the next day or two to capture this and put it out. Nolan Live's not on telly at the minute, but there's 250,000 people following me on Twitter, so we'll make sure we get it out in that. And we'll continue to ask questions. One of the questions that we will now go back to the local council and indeed NI Water with, because the council and the councillors represent that area too, is why can this work not be done at night? Why not?
I know, but if they could start working at night, that would be brilliant. But we need compensated for the damage done to date to our business.
Well, you're not going to survive. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like, we are seriously on the back foot here, Stephen, and we need financial support, and we need it urgently from NI Water. And I just can't believe a public body would literally go and knowingly put anybody out of business, but a brand new business that's doing so well. It's just beyond belief. Unforgettable.
Sian, thank you. We'll stay in touch. Thank you. Good morning to you. 03030805555, maybe around that local area. Next, the budget coming this Wednesday. Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, will be on her feet. It's Labour's first budget for, what, 14 years? Sir Keir Starmer insisting that Labour will protect working people, but that's a wide definition, working people. What does it actually mean? It's being hinted that people who own shares, assets, properties will be hit. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, has said working people would not see higher taxes on their pay slips. The economist, Paul Gosling. Morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, and the Northern Ireland Conservative, Matthew Robinson. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Stephen.
Paul, am I on a different planet? Or does working people mean people who work? Like, how does it not mean people who work?
They dug themselves into a political hole here, Stephen, because the phrase working people can mean lots of different things to lots of different people. What they really mean is what they're thinking of in terms of being earned income and unearned income. So what they're trying to say, really, is they're not going to increase the tax rates on people from their wages and salaries, but actually they will increase the taxes on things you get otherwise. So, for example, capital gains tax and some other income that is not as a result directly of what you're doing in terms of your day-to-day work. I mean, and they dug themselves into a hole because of the looseness of their language.
Matthew?
They certainly have dug themselves into a hole, and all indications are that this is going to be one of the biggest tax-raising budgets in history. I mean, I point you just to a couple of days ago, the director of the IFS, who's respected on both sides of the House in Westminster, Paul Johnson, indicated just that. And using creative language will fool nobody. The reality is the Chancellor has found herself in a position where she's looking to now increase borrowing, raise taxes. This is the same old Labour, higher borrowing, higher taxes. Just look at UK bond yields on the rise. Everybody is expecting borrowing to go up. And this is so cynical because Labour, going into the election, and the Conservative Party warned the public about this, promised no tax raises on hardworking people. And what have we got? Potential tax national insurance increases on hardworking employers, small businesses.
I'll tell you what we've got, Matthew. Labour's telling us what we've got is a £22 billion black hole in public finances left by your party, and it's got to be fixed.
That is a myth. What did Labour do on day one? They offered over generous public sector pay increases and are looking to defer blame to the previous government on that. I'm sorry, it will just not wash at all. And by the way, there were early indications of this last month. Look what the UK government did, pausing city deals in Northern Ireland that it's hit places like Derry, Londonderry. These are deals that were laid out by the previous Conservative government guaranteeing good money for Northern Ireland. We've already seen the early warning shocks about that. This is a government that has no way, certainly little regard for public spending in Northern Ireland, and it's not going to squeeze small businesses. I worry about this this budget. And by the way, you look at potential increases in capital gains. This is looking to squeeze people on every single...
The vast majority of people in the country do not pay capital gains tax.
Well, I mean, that is neither here nor there. The reality is that this is they're looking to hit every single segment of society that already pay massive amount in
But Paul Gosling, what they're arguing is they're not hitting every single segment of society, and they've guaranteed, and they're saying, Paul, they're going to stick to their promise of not raising income tax, national insurance on working people. Is someone on, I don't know, 150 grand a year, a working person?
I think you need to focus on the fundamentals here, Stephen, which is that we've got governments in the UK that have had declining tax revenue as a result of COVID, Brexit, and also the Ukraine war. It's created economic difficulties, and we've got a government that needs to reduce revenue spending and to increase capital spending to invest in infrastructure. And they're trying to calculate how best to do that. And yes, there will be increases in effect for tax, because one of the things they're likely to do is to not raise the income tax threshold. So basically, as you get a pay rise, you start paying more tax than previously you might otherwise have expected to. So yes, there will be, I think, a shift. I think there's some things we need to focus on in terms of the impact in Northern Ireland. The increase on employers' contributions for national insurance, I think, will be, and this touches on your previous conversation, it will be particularly difficult for businesses in the hospitality sector in Northern Ireland to deal with. So there may well be some implications in terms of employment as well.
Okay. Paul, Matthew, thank you. Gerard's in Kilkeel. Back to the speed vans, Gerard. Good morning.
Morning, Stephen. Yeah, I just was, it's a road I drive quite regularly. The A1 that goes from Newry to Belfast, or from Dublin to Belfast, it is 70 for large swathes of it, but for also large swathes of it, it's 60. And I can see no real reason. I mean, there's nothing changes in the road. The road's the same. The trees are the same. On the main road from Belfast to Newry, or Newry to Belfast.
Well, there must be a reason.
Well, if there is, I'd like to know it. Maybe, and I'm not saying there have been accidents in that road, surely, but there seems to be no logical reason that I can see. It changes as you're coming towards Banbridge, where you're going to turn off into Banbridge, it goes to 60, and then it just stays 60.
What's the what's the problem with slowing down to 60? Like, from 70, is 60 not fast enough?
No, I'm not saying that's a problem, that's Stephen, but I mean, if you're doing 70, and then there's not that much signage then the rest of the road. So if you were doing 70 and had your car, say, on the cruise control, and you're doing 70 the whole way from Dublin, and all of a sudden this goes to 60, It's very hard when you're on the same type of a road to get it into your head that it's 60 then. And it might change back to 70. I must actually check that. I mean, usually the only way you could find out, you'd put your sat-nav on. You can look at
this
the
is thing. A good opportunity today for us all to talk about road safety and what many people do and when they're in their car. Like, how many people listening to this today can honestly say to themselves that they don't look up a text message on their phone when they're driving, that they've never done it? Do you think it would be half?
No, probably not. Probably more people look at it than that, to quite honest. But I mean, another thing, Stephen, they've done. I was done for speeding twice, I think, in my whole life. The last time I challenged it, the PPS refused to send me out the video footage of the alleged offence, and ended up the magistrate convicted me. I took it to the appeal court, and I won it in the appeal court because they wouldn't furnish me with the footage.
Oh, really? That's interesting. How did you win that case?
I won it on the basis that they refused to furnish me with the actual evidence that I had been speeding. Despite numerous attempts and discovery, I tried to get the evidence from them. They just wouldn't send it to me.
And what was their reason?
they never gave a reason. I mean, the magistrate just had his hammer. He didn't want to go into an argument about it at all. He just said guilty. And then when I appealed it to the appeal court, I mean, obviously you get a fairer hearing because you can put your point across. And yeah, the appeal court judge wasn't having any of it, that they wouldn't send me the evidence to show that I was speeding. I mean, my argument was there was about four people could have been driving my car that are insured on it at the time.
Well, I don't know how that's an argument, because you've got a requirement to declare who's driving the car, don't you?
But I didn't know.
You must have known who was driving your own car.
No, because four people can drive it at any time. Like, my sons would have been driving, my wife would have been driving it.
Well, so did you not ask them?
But Stephen, it's not like, oh, you're going out on that. I mean, by the time you get this through, say it's 2 weeks after the event, you don't actually know. Was I driving it at that time or that day? I don't honestly know. And that would be the honest answer.
Jared, thanks. Thanks for calling us today. Listen, Buckler's on his way to America, I hear. Oh, my goodness. Who's he going with? What's this all about? Let's have a listen.
A second Trump term would be a huge risk for America and dangerous.
She's destroying this country, and if she becomes president, this country doesn't have a chance of success.
Next week, America decides who should be its next president. and Good Morning Ulster will be broadcasting live from the States, hearing the views of voters as Kamala Harris takes on Donald Trump.
We're here to support that man, and we just got stronger in our determination to do it.
I'm reinforced in my belief that he is an existential threat to our democracy.
It's a shame that my vote counts the same as your vote.
It's a shame that you aren't in the same reality that we are.
And it remains a close, contentious, and controversial campaign.
They're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats.
Talk about extreme.
The US election. Full coverage across BBC News NI. And join me, Chris Buckler, for Good Morning Ulster, live from America, every morning next week on BBC Radio Ulster and anytime on BBC Sounds.
Never mind, Good Morning Ulster, Buckler. We want you on Nolan. That's such an exciting election, isn't it? And it's coming up very, very soon. Big Barbara, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Now, here you're talking about these roads and people driving on the roads.
Yes.
Well, that Knockfield carriageway, I used to live over there.
Right.
And whenever I used to be driving along that Knockfield carriageway, it's a 40-mile speed limit. And people used to sit behind me and blink the lights for me to move over into this. That's what they call the slow lane.
Uh-huh.
But it's a 40-mile speed limit the whole way.
Uh-huh.
And they just don't take heed.
Have you got...
For instance, my daughter here's at the doctor this morning and in Lisburn. And due to come round the corner and this car come through the red light.
Oh,
and lucky enough,
sake.
There was a police car behind them. And thank goodness they pulled them in.
Oh, did they? Good.
Yes.
Good.
Thank goodness. Because I go to all them safety meetings when I can. And I know that those mates and all those, the 5pm cameras are not working.
Are you on Twitter?
Believe me, they are working.
Are you on Twitter?
No.
Why not?
Because I can't work the phone so well.
I want you to see this picture. I want us all to look at this picture in the Knockfield carriageway.
Well, I know the Knockfield carriageway well from one end of the door and I was married over there.
At Stephen Nolan on Twitter. There's a new housing development there, Barbara.
I'll get my daughter to do it on her phone.
Get her to show you it. Sure, give us a ring and let us know. How are you keeping today?
Well, I'm just doing rightly. But I'm saying, you talk about older drivers and all. The older drivers, it's more careful and better drivers than what the younger ones is.
Look, there's someone calling us this morning from South Armagh. We'll see if we get him on after 10. He was on the A1 yesterday. And he's claiming that a car passed him doing over 150 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Wow.
When I was driving on the Hill Hall Road, sure, and it's a very, very bad, dangerous road.
I know that road.
And they used to overtake me, and I used to say, well, if they go around that corner of this car, come and tough luck if they get killed.
Yeah.
So it is terrible the way some of the drivers are going.
Listen, thanks very much. All the best. See you soon. Here comes the news at 10 o'clock from the BBC. The Stephen Nolan Show! Is it big?
It is big. One more time.
We've been together for decades now, and once again, for the 20th year in a row, you've made the Nolan Show the biggest show in the country.
We need full truth and full accountability from the outset on this, Stephen.
The listening figures have just been released. 9 a.m. here on the Nolan Show is the biggest place in radio anywhere in Northern Ireland. One more time, we're gonna celebrate.
Stephen, not nothing new, but again,
that's a change.
It's not a place.
I get the blame for everything. It's a wonder I'm not getting blamed for the portrait.
Yeah,
Stephen.
Yes, Peter.
That sounds like a dictatorship.
That's what it sounds like to you, does it?
I suggest you look up American television.
Look up American television.
American,
what do you want me to watch? Quincy.
Can't stop. We're gonna celebrate
one more time. You know, it's chronic gridlock every day.
Now, how do you feel about this?
It is a disgrace.
If he hadn't been so cheeky, Councillor Whitey, he might have got an invite to come with me.
Would you have been the last person that I would want to go with?
No, no, you be careful. Hey, just feeling. Music's got me feeling a need. What say ye about this? What's going on?
Stephen, as a taxi driver...
What'd you put him on for?
What?
Sorry, Robert, carry on.
Well, when I was a boy and the Beatles wrote a famous song called Taxman, the top rate of tax for fat cats like you was 95%. Would you believe that?
I'm getting prickly heat thinking about this. Celebrate and dance so free. One more time. Music's got me feeling so free. We're gonna
celebrate. Celebrate and dance so free. One more time. Doesn't sound as if he's working anyway.
Well, it doesn't sound but like anyway, you're working.
I'm not.
To be honest with you, you know, and you can all laugh if you like, but I'm looking up the definition of putative.
See, if he can't do the job, let somebody else do it then.
In the Southwest, they have horse equine studies.
Horse equine studies?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I have a human right to choose how I live my life.
Each to their own. You just got the feeling so free. We're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance so free. And from all of us here at the Nolan team, it is thank you once again. Thank you, thank you, thank you. One more time. I've got the feeling so free. We're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance so free. Will you listen to that mix that goes out on the Nolan Show most days of the week? The fun, the serious politics, the banter, the crying, the laughter. That's what has made this programme the biggest show in the country over the last 20 years. Every single survey that comes out puts us right up there in terms of news and current affairs. And the Nolan Show podcast actually is one of the biggest podcasts in news and nations and regions throughout the whole of the UK. And I guess that's that special relationship you have talking to us about the news and the way you do so. You roll your sleeves up and you get stuck in. So thank you. And it all starts from you doing one of two things. Either bringing your stories to Nolan. So the email is nolan@bbc.co.uk. Or if you want to talk about the news, thinking that you can do that right here at the BBC at 9 o'clock in the morning. And if you've got a story, nolan@bbc.co.uk, please don't forget that. And remember our number, 03030805555. Now, many of you listening this morning will be parents or grandparents. Is it time to make smacking in Northern Ireland a criminal offence? It's already illegal in Scotland and Wales, and the UK government is now considering a ban for England. Here, it is still legal for a carer or a parent to discipline a child physically if it is deemed to be reasonable punishment. The Justice Minister, Naomi Long, is in favour of changing the law, but the executive is divided over the issue. Her department has told the Nolan Show it has not to date been possible to secure the agreement of the Northern Ireland executive to bring forward legislative provisions to effect this change. So let's discuss it together then. 03030805555. The Health Minister, Mike Nesbitt, was in the studio last week and I asked him if he thinks smacking should be illegal.
I think it would be desirable that it never happened, but whether that should be enshrined in law is an open question to me, and I haven't consulted with the party yet, and it's the sort of area where I want to bring the party with me.
Should a parent have a right to choose for themselves how they discipline their children, including smacking them?
It depends on you know, you're giving a parent the right to inflict physical punishment on somebody.
That's what smacking is.
Yeah. I'm not comfortable with it, but I'm going to take it to the party and the party will decide. But we've got to consider these practical issues along the way.
Well, that shows you just how, I guess, there are different debates on both sides of this, genuinely held views. There's the leader of the Ulster Unionist Party. He's not sure. He's going to bring it to the party. The former Northern Ireland Children's Commissioner, Kulu Zasuma, is with us for this. Also the commentator and parent, Emma Wolfe. Kula, I asked if she believes it's time to ban smacking in Northern Ireland.
I think it's long past time to remove this defence of reasonable punishment to when you hit a child. So yes, I do think it's time to stop smacking children.
Why take the right away from parents to do it?
It's not a right. And Stephen, last week was Parenting Week. And one of the things about Parenting Week is that parents are asking for support and they're asking for advice on the best way to parent their children. There is overwhelming evidence. There is overwhelming evidence that smacking, one, doesn't work. And secondly, often when a child is experiences physical abuse, and that's not, this is not what smacking is, it's not serious physical abuse, but it often starts with smacking because parents are struggling to understand, you know, to understand the some parents are struggling to understand the escalation.
Emma.
Now, I'm afraid this proposed ban is completely misdirected. I can understand, you know, the intention, but actually what parents need, if they are struggling with difficult behaviour in their children or if they're resorting to physical kind of discipline, they need support, they need guidance. The fact of the matter is there is real serious child neglect, child abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse going on out there. Absolutely. And that needs to be, that needs to be detected and ended. But the fact, A, this is completely unenforceable. I do not see how anyone is going to know if someone is indoors and smacks their child. They're not going to know. Secondly, this is not the issue. The issue is those children who are really, really being hurt, being abused by their child, but by their parent. None of us who were tapped on the bottom or on the back of the legs, on the back of the thigh, tapped as a child, was damaged by that. People, children who are damaged are the ones who are experiencing real physical abuse. So, smacking doesn't lead to the terribly, terribly troubling cases that we saw Sara Sharif recently.
Emma, and it is right, and Emma's absolutely right, that we mustn't demonise parents. And I speak as an interim CEO of a parenting organisation. But actually, there is overwhelming evidence from across the world the physical punishment and what increases aggression in children, increases antisocial behaviour in children, increases depression and anxiety in children.
Well, it depends what you mean by aggression, Shirley Kula. That's a very broad term, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So we mean aggressive and violent behaviour in children. So I'm not making this up, Stephen.
But is smacking a child lightly on the bottom deemed aggression?
It is likely because often it escalates, but that's not what this is about. Right. What this is about is that 63% of adults, 71% of parents in Northern Ireland when independently surveyed in 2021 supported a change in the law. What we've seen in the Republic of Ireland, what we've seen in Scotland, what we've seen in Wales, and what we've seen in Jersey is a change in the law that hasn't demonised parents, it hasn't criminalised parents. What it's done is given clear and strong advice and support and guidance to parents as to the best way to be able to rear their children, they're asking for.
Yeah, but it's saying it's the best way, but it's stating it's the best way. It doesn't prove it's the best way.
Yes, it does, because Stephen, just look on the website, of Children's Commissioner website. There's any goodness amount of references to research, longitudinal, robust research from all over the world that says smacking children, a light tap, and does not work for many children. It's the same as saying wearing a seatbelt when we have an accident. And we're wearing a seatbelt. Not everyone gets a serious injury, but we know that wearing a seatbelt prevents serious injuries. And this
I'm
is one of the measures
that
will prevent serious abuse. It's not the only measure, but it supports parents and it helps to nip things in the bud. It's a preventative
measure. No, it doesn't support parents in any way. Well, I know, but I mean, I'm talking about as a person who was parented by as a child. I'm talking about the actual experience. I'm talking about the actual the reality. And of course, look, I understand as a former children's commissioner and children's commissioners in general. Of course, they have to put this kind of, you know, they set out the agenda. But actually, the reality is, parents who are really hurting children, who are inflicting harm on their children, are in a completely different category to parents who are caring for their young children and maybe once in a while will tap them and say, no, like when a child runs out into the road and you grab them and you say no. And you wouldn't want to hurt them in any way. It's about their own safety. They have crossed a line and they need a shock. They need to know that that is not safe. That kind of thing does not lead. That kind of thing does not lead to inflicting violence on children. It's a completely different category. And also, it's not going to affect parents. I mean, the guidance is there. The guidance is going to be published on the Children's Commissioner website.
Can I just check, Emma?
Well,
if you're advocating that parents should do this and should be able to do this... And
I'm not advocating it. I'm just saying that is a completely different thing to what we're really trying to tackle, which is child abuse.
You're supporting...
The right of a parent to do it.
So therefore, should that equate to when children are in school? Young children in a school. If parents have the right to do it, why not a teacher in a primary school? Why not?
No, absolutely not.
Why
not? Absolutely not.
Why not?
No, because there has to be a very, very clear line that a parents in their own way. And I'm not even advocating.
But this is about teaching children the difference between right and wrong. Those formative years in a primary school. Why should a trusted teacher not be able to do it if a parent can?
No, absolutely not.
Why not?
I would take my 4-year-old out of any school where they laid a hand on my child because there is a line, because things that parents
do... So it's all right for you to do it, but not the teacher?
Well, I don't do it, but what I'm saying is, as a child, if my parents tapped me lightly... on the bottom.
Emma,
well, we're not going to talk about me. No, I'm not. No, I'm sorry. I'm not going there. I'm not descending into this. Not about my parenting style. I haven't asked you whether you're a parent or whether you have any experience of young children. But what I'm talking about is preventing emotional and physical abuse to children. And the idea that one leads to the other is so, it actually does children a disservice. Because the focus from the Children's Commissioners should be on protecting children. And there are children out there suffering. And instead, we're talking about, you know, very, very sort of middle class parents giving their child the occasional tap in a blue moon.
OK, I think so. Just to say, I am a parent and I have obviously also been parented and I am not interested. And this isn't about Children's Commissioners. This is about what the evidence is. This is about all the children's organisations. And I'm only speaking for Northern Ireland. And this is about parents across Northern Ireland asking for clearer guidance and support. We know that the changes in the law have not seen the criminalisations of parents in the circumstances that Emma has described. Nobody is interested in doing that, and it's not in the best interest of children or parents to criminalise children, but it is to get advice, to give advice to parents. We know that most parents in Northern Ireland don't do this, and we know that because we ask them. It's sometimes really difficult to use our personal experiences to advocate for certain types of childcare. The law will give clarity. I think, in view of the overwhelming support for changing the law, that our Assembly and our Executive should bring it to the floor of the Assembly to be able to discuss this properly. Because this is an example of where the people and parents in particular in Northern Ireland are asking our politicians to lead and make the changes. And I'm not gonna harp on again about the evidence. The evidence does tell us that this can lead. And if we want to, this is one of the measures to prevent serious harm to children.
Cooler, thank you very much. Emma, thank you. Always good to talk to you both. Thanks a lot. Wayne's in Warren Point. Good morning.
Stephen, I can't believe this nonsense. I really can't.
What are you talking about?
That woman who says about disciplining children. Is the world going nuts that you can't even chastise a child with a small slap? Like, basically...
Well, is the world gone nuts that people are questioning inflicting pain on a child? You don't question
it? Stephen, put it against... anybody who basically has a family and rears them, that don't go out to cause the child harm by discipline, by a fine slap or a thing, it's just a learn them wrong from right. But the other side is that some people who go out of their way to hurt children is completely different.
Well, that's not what we're talking about. But so how hard is it acceptable in your view to hit a child?
And in such a way that you don't leave a mark. I don't hit my child because my child roars all the time. I know I can't hit my child. My child roars all the time because he has a disability. We accept that. Probably guess that my neighbours thought the way my child behaves because he roars every day for 5 or 6 hours a day at the top of his voice. I would have the police in my house every 10 minutes. You know what I mean? People don't seem to understand. There's no right way or wrong way to discipline a child. My way is to take his iPad or his tablet off. But some people, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
John and Newton Abbey. Morning, John.
Stephen, we'll tell you, I'm one of 8 kids. My father smacked me and the rest of us when we were kids. Done none of us no harm. None of us went AWOL or went ballistic and done something that because we got smacked in the back of our leg. I have 4 kids. They all got a smack when they were kids for doing something.
So how hard do you hit them? To the point where they cry?
Well, just a gentle smack in the back of our leg for doing something they shouldn't have been doing. And my kids smacked their children. They've all grown up now. And out of the whole 3 generations, my grandkids, my kids, and us, not one of us ever went AWOL because we got a smack.
But you've got to smack hard enough that the child knows that you're saying that's wrong.
You don't have to smack hard enough. The threat of even a smack should be sufficient. But if a child continues to do something that shouldn't be doing because it's ignoring his parents, a small tap around the back of the leg is suffice. And if it works, it works. And I can tell you it worked in my generation, it worked in my kids' generation, and it's working in my grandchildren's generation. So, yes, children, parents go through the life in bringing these children into the world and raising them. Nobody's asking you to abuse them. But if a child does something, a small smack around the leg does them no harm whatsoever.
Well,
in the
but what about the view of children? What about the view of children whose parents smack them very hard?
That's physical abuse, Stephen. There's a fine line there between hammering your child and giving it a gentle smack. Come on, let's go. There's a fine line. If I was looking at one of my children or my grandchildren or my son did it with his child and hit him really hard, continually around the back of the legs, that's physical abuse. But if you give a child a tap around the back of the leg, gentle tap around the back of the leg and tell them that you're not getting ahead what you're doing, and that's what you got that for, that child will understand.
John, thank you. If we look at the political parties, the question we're asking this morning is, do you think it should be brought, the ban should be brought into law here in Northern Ireland? Sinn Féin and the Alliance Party within the executive have told us that the law should be changed to ban it. Sinn Féin say the defence of reasonable punishment was removed in the South in 2015. We want a consistent approach across the island. The Alliance Party. Alliance does not support the corporal punishment of children and for years has been calling for the defence of reasonable chastisement to be removed. We're still waiting to hear from the DUP. The SCLP, they're in opposition, of course. We support the ban being introduced here. The TUV believes parents should be allowed to exercise reasonable discipline of their children, including smacking. 23 minutes past 10, the Nolan Show on Radio Ulster this Monday morning. Next, wait for this one. New York, a bill is currently making its way through council about employers giving paid time off so that employees can care for their sick pets. If your snake is sick, if your wee rabbit, your dog, your cat is sick, employers would have to give the employees time off to look after wee Snowy. Commentator Emma D'Souza is with us. Business owner Max Mackin is with us. Morning, Emma.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Max. What do you make of this?
Hi, do you know what? As mad as it sounds, Stephen, it's not actually a new thing. It's, if you can look back, there was a company in Minneapolis, actually around 2018, who gave people paternity leave, which they called pawternity leave, where you could take a week or two off if you got a new pet to help train your pet become accustomed to it, just like you do when you have a child. You get some paternity leave off. So as far back as certainly 2016, people have been doing this here. But it just seems now in the world where it's kind of like just the moderate sort of you needed to get, the moderate just does get.
Well, where does this end?
2 weeks off sick leave for a dog or a snake, like you said, or a lizard. It just seems absurd.
Where does this end, Emma? Like, for example, if someone is working, but they need to take their dog to the dog groomers, for example, are they unavailable?
Well, I think the
bill is only progressing through. While getting paid for it, are they unavailable?
No. I think the bill in New York, Stephen, actually does contain parameters. And of course, if this bill did proceed into legislation, it would include restrictions in terms of what reason you could take off work. And it would also include limitations on whether that was just service animals or whether that was going to be legal pets. And there are, of course, parameters in law that would have to be brought in place. So it couldn't be a case of taking a day off sick to take your dog to the groomers. But I do have to say, as a dog owner myself with four dogs, if your dog does become ill and you have to monitor them, get them to the emergency room at the vet, it can be very serious. And there is definitely grounds here for that being something to be brought forward.
Well, we look at the law. It guarantees workers at companies with more than 100 employees 56 hours of paid leave a year for personal sick time or take care of a family member. Small businesses get 40 hours. This is the law in New York City Council. Some of the companies have changed their policies voluntarily. If the law is extended to all pets in a city of over 8 million, it would be without precedent, Max. But some people love their pets as much as they love their family members. That's the bottom line.
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm telling
Although
you, there are
I
some
do.
People
no, I agree with
that
you.
Love
I
them.
People like dogs and pets have become a real, so like almost like
member
a
of the family
since lockdown. And people have got very attached to them. But at the same time, you can't really, you can't, no matter what you're trying to do, you can't judge a dog or a cat like a human. It just doesn't work like that. I know people do love them and people care about them. But at the same time, if you're going to sort of like take people off, if somebody wants to take time off because their pet's ill and use their time, I completely understand that there. That's fair. But if some people sort of use it as like you just said, well, I'm taking the dog to the groomers or I'm doing this, I'm doing that, just to take time off, people will abuse it. Like you know, we're normal society, we know this. People always take a dodgy Monday off because they had a bad weekend and they'll pretend they're ill. And the same thing could happen. So I suppose like the lady says, if there's rhyme and reason around it, do's and don'ts, then maybe it would work.
Emma, is it actually the sign of a responsible employer that in the same way if you said to an employer, look, you know, I've got to get my son's hair cut today, I've got to get my dog's hair cut today. My child is sick. I've got to stay at home. My dog is sick. My cat is sick. My budgie is sick.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Stephen, you know, the reality is we are, you know, globally, I mean, really a nation, especially here, but also in New York, as you say, 8 million pets. You know, people are increasingly pet lovers and pet owners. And they do, for many people, it is an extension of your family. I mean, certainly for us in our home, our four dogs, we actually, our whole lives are kind of planned around them in terms of when we go on holiday, how long we're out of the house for. And if they're sick, that absolutely is a priority for us in our home. And for many people, it is the same thing. And I do think that it is responsible and it is a sign of more progressive policies to acknowledge that there are care responsibilities if you are an owner of an animal. You are responsible for their health, and an employer that facilitates you using your sick leave for that purpose, I think that is definitely a progressive policy that should be brought forward to recognize that we are a nation of people who love our animals.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much. We've no time this morning to take calls on this. Thank you, Emma. Thank you, Max. Look at that. Show's over now. And we're just about to take calls on the whole range of subjects that we've been talking about. You can, though, email us or tweet me. If you're emailing me, nolan@bbc.co.uk. If you're sending me a wee tweet, it's to @StephenNolan on Twitter. Thank you very much indeed for your company today. Day of the week, is it? It's only Monday, the 28th of October. We should start talking about all these Christmas decorations and selection boxes. What type of mad person buys a selection box in October? I had one at the weekend. It was lovely. The chocolate's getting smaller. We'll see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Have a good day, everyone, and thanks for listening.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @StephenNolan.